Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Willie P is in a building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, as well as the radio.com app. Ken Roundtree producing in our Midtown Atlanta studios. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P, on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line and the phone lines. Also on Twitter, at Willie P Style, where Ricky asks about the dome at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Will it be open either today for Five Stripes or tomorrow for the game against the Lions? I know that there was rain supposed to be in the forecast for this afternoon. I see it on the radar, but they're saying there's only about a 20% chance of it coming through our atmosphere here in Atlanta, but I don't know if they want to take a chance on that. I also don't know what the policies are. Usually if you start the game with it open and or closed, it has to stay that way. At least that's usually the way it works in most of these scenarios and situations. So I'm guessing that as a result of that, they probably want to err on the side of caution when it comes to the scenario that probably want to keep it closed. So whether that has any effect on the game or not remains to be seen. Watching and keeping a close eye on this Nebraska-Ohio State game. Huskers came to play, man. Adrian Martinez, 6 of 8, 64 yards. Luke McCaffrey, he's Christian's brother, 4 carries for 69 yards. Nice. Also, Justin Fields has yet to throw an incomplete pass. 9 of 9, 134 yards and a touchdown. He's also ran for 38. Ohio State facing a 4th-and-1 midway through the second quarter again. 14-14 is the score there at the Horseshoe. And it kind of goes back to what I talked about, and we'll get into this a little bit later on in about 15 minutes when we talk a little bit of college football, not only as part of the Big Ten, but also some Georgia talk involved. It really comes down to the fact that if you are one of these Big Ten schools and you're looking for any possible way to impress, it's not just about winning your football games, but it's the cosmetic nature in which you make that happen. Eye test is going to be a big part of the judgment for the College Football Playoff Committee when it comes to the four teams that are inside the College Football Playoff come January. Of course, we'll get into that all across this hour of programming. Also, again, a little bit more on the Braves' demise, if you will, against the Dodgers. I might even sprinkle in some Hawks because we now know, at least for sure, when and where the NBA draft is going to take place here in about 2.5 weeks approaching, and also a potential beginning of the season could happen before Christmas. We'll get into some of the comments that have been made. And also, if you missed my conversations earlier this week when I was on with Andy, talking to both Dave Archer and Jarvis Davis, we will replay you some portions of their answers for that coming up next when we talk a little bit more about Falcons and Lions. Again, our coverage begins at 9 o'clock tomorrow for a 1 p.m. kick inside the bends on 92.9 The Game. Before we do that, we'll take a look at the entire NFL with an NFL Ground and Pound. Some key matchups in week number 7 include an NFC South versus NFC South matchup, Panthers and Saints. No Emmanuel Sanders, no Michael Thomas for the New Orleans Saints, which has a lot of people thinking that Carolina could come in and upset the apple cart inside the Superdome. It was rumored that because of the fact that they were having trouble getting the New Orleans mayor to have fans inside the Superdome, that they might have moved that game to Tiger Stadium. But for now, they're staying at the Superdome. They got the mayor to, I guess, take the locks off the stadium doors for a little bit. I think they're going to have somewhere in the vicinity of 3,000 fans, if I'm remembering that correctly, at the Superdome come Sunday. But, of course, without his two wide receivers that are a big part of the way that Sean Payton and Drew Brees run their offense, Payton says it's a team that's still searching for an identity.
We've had some gutsy wins. I still feel like I'm learning relative to who we can be, who we are. I mean, we talk about the perfect game. It's out there like Shangri-La, and I just think there's a number of areas that we have to improve, but there is a resiliency. I think we have good leadership. We've overcome some early obstacles, and yet, in fairness to the evaluation, we haven't played near what I think we're capable of playing, and that's the one thing that I'm anxious to answer this question again in 8 weeks. Hopefully it's clear.
Hopefully it's not. That's just my own opinion, because I don't want anything good to happen to that team. And we all know why. Steelers and Titans, a battle of unbeatens at 5-0. Tennessee probably a little bit more of a surprise unbeaten, even though they were the team that almost made it to the Super Bowl last year. Few thought that they'd be able to double it up and play as well as they have to this point in the season, especially with some of the COVID-related cancellations and postponements that they've had to go through. But they have weathered the storm. Does the name Ty Cimbrello mean anything to you? Well, it should. Former Falcon lineman who was a swing tackle for us a year ago caught the big tackle-eligible pass in the 17th week of the season from Matt Ryan. He's now starting guard on the Titans roster because their all-pro Taylor Lewan tore his ACL last week in the game against the Texans. Funny, on the first play, Cimbrello actually let a guy go past him for a strip sack that turned the football over with Ryan Tannehill. But now the Titans ended up coming back and winning that football game against Houston, and a big matchup now against the Steelers. Big Ben says he's fine with being a game manager in this sense.
Ben, I know earlier in your career, when people would call you a game manager, you didn't necessarily like that. But do you feel like you're managing the game better now than you ever have in your career?
Yeah, maybe. I feel like that's kind of what I've been doing the last 5 weeks. I'm trying to get us in the best play I can, and, you know, try not to turn the ball over and just do things to help the team win the game. We keep winning football games, I'll keep trying to do that.
He sounded kind of ticked off when he's called a game manager. That's always something that quarterbacks get somewhat in their feelings about when you call them a game manager. Don't call me a game manager. That means you're telling me I can't throw, right? 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 Well, I mean, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck. Steelers and Titans, that's probably the best game of the 1 o'clock slate, and maybe the best one of the entire weekend. 49ers and Patriots. This one doesn't have the sheen that I think it might have had for the 425 CBS contest coming up at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Niners, they really draw the short straw, didn't they? Having to play all these games out east. Another chance that they go cross-country. They already had the two games in New York in back-to-back weeks, so that had them have to stay in West Virginia. Yeah, I remember the whole situation with the MRI machine not working. This is Cam Newton with the Patriots at 2-3. Evaluating the start, which has been a little unsettling for him, but he thinks that they can get it turned around.
You know, not making any excuses. I'm just saying, you know, we put ourselves in a better situation to win. I just say it like that. Not saying that we didn't have the capabilities of winning last week, because we did. We had our opportunities. You know, for us as an offense, we know that our excuse basket is running, you know, real low. You know, we're getting guys back that we missed for weeks. And, you know, even though we're missing a couple other guys, but we got enough to compete with anybody. And I mean anybody.
I just did a cursory search of Amazon. I could not find an excuse basket or what it looks like. I asked my buddy who covers the Patriots, what does the Patriots excuse basket look like? He says it's full of Cam Newton's hats. So there you go. Again, 49ers and Patriots. Buccaneers and Raiders, the entire Raiders starting offensive line on the COVID-19 reserve list. John Gruden says they'll be ready to go. They've had no new positives, so they're going to try and add some guys back onto the active roster so that Derek Carr's offensive line doesn't look like a complete sieve on Sunday, but it might be somewhat compromised when they take on the Buccaneers. Tom Brady was criticized after that Thursday Night Football loss to the Chicago Bears for snubbing Nick Foles. He apologized.
I didn't even think about that. So I think Nick Foles is a hell of a player and a Super Bowl champ. And I don't know one reason or another why I wouldn't do that. But I don't know. Sometimes I've run off the field. Sometimes I haven't. Sometimes if I have a personal relationship, like I have with Drew and Justin and Aaron over the years. I don't know. I don't think it's anything in particular other than I have great admiration for Nick, and he's a hell of a player. They're off to a great start.
Brady getting forgetful at his old age, not only forgetting to dap up Nick Foles after the game, but forgetting how many downs there are. Of course, the big news from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' perspective is the signing. Hasn't been made official yet, but the impending signing of Antonio Brown, one-year deal. Basically, the NFL's minimum wage, a little bit above that. A lot of personal incentives and team incentives for Antonio Brown. I think Antonio Brown's not on that football team by Thanksgiving. Just me. But, again, that just kind of is the way I feel about it, because I feel like he'll do something to make sure that that doesn't go the way that people think it's going to. But, again, maybe I just don't. Maybe that's just the we. Maybe that's just me. By the way, Mike Conti just replied back to Ricky Bevington. Roof currently closed at the Bengals. So, kind of what I thought it was going to be, because they're worried about the potential chances for rain there for the game today. Five Stripes again taking on DC United. 3:30 pregame here on 92.9 The Game. Part of a packed weekend at the Bengals, which includes our Falcons. I found it interesting what Dave Archer said about Matthew Stafford and how he'll be remembered when it's all said and done for the former Georgia quarterback who the Falcons face this week. It's the first time he'll play a pro game inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. First time he'll play a pro game in Atlanta. We'll talk about that coming up next. Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com. Willie P is in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com. Flipping back and forth between the Ohio State-Nebraska game and game between the Eagles and Shants. Shy Wirtz and the Eagles trying to get one before halftime against number 25 Coastal Carolina as they approach halftime. We'll see if they can possibly make something happen here before the break. Nebraska's trying to do the same against Ohio State, but having its troubles as they approach halftime at the Horseshoe in Columbus. Ohio State by 3 there. And it's a little bit closer at Clemson than I think a lot of people thought it would, but I don't know if you see Syracuse as a really big threat. At 17-7, Clemson knocking on the doorstep, approaching halftime as well. There in plus territory is Clemson, again, with a 17-7 lead. All knotted up in the SEC right now, with Auburn and Ole Miss. That game is 14-14 in Oxford at halftime, the only SEC game going on right now. There's really no games inside the conference that are going opposite any. Alabama-Tennessee is the CBS game at 3:30, and then Kentucky and Missouri in what I call the SEC Network Purgatory game, because that game has to go up against the 3:30 CBS game on the SEC Network, and then South Carolina-LSU under the lights at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge on ESPN. Of course, Georgia Tech takes on Boston College at Alumni Stadium, Chestnut Hill. Boston College a favorite in that game, but I think Georgia Tech should have the sauce to try and come in there and win. The problem with Georgia Tech is they played Clemson last week, and there's been kind of a proven thing over the last couple of seasons that anytime you play Clemson, that has an effect on your team the week following, and Georgia Tech got drubbed 73-7 last week. We'll talk a little bit more about college football coming up about 50 minutes from right now. We'll get into some of what Kevin Warren said. And also, I do want to sprinkle in some Hawks at some point throughout the show, just because we are getting closer and closer to at least the draft and maybe some decisions for the Hawks front office to try and figure out what exactly the direction is for this franchise once the NBA gets back up and going. Again, the NBA saying that at least the reports are from Adrian Wojnarowski that they will try and do something by the start of the Christmas season and have a bit of a shorter season. And we'll get into all that coming up in about 15 minutes from right now. I had a chance to fill in during the week with Andy Bunker on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy as Randy McMichael takes care of his lovely wife on her birthday weekend in a tropical island elsewhere. But looking at some of the things that we were talking about over the course of this week involved a pair of conversations with Dave Archer and Jarvis Davis, two of our main Falcons insiders. Of course, Arch, you hear him on the game broadcast, and Jarvis, one of our main Falcons supporters. And one of the things that I asked Dave Archer, and I feel like a lot of people are asking this question, what looked different for the Falcons this week? He said they played four quarters, and that was big.
And this was a game that was their most complete game. They played really well defensively from a technique standpoint, from attention to detail standpoint. Leveraging ball carriers, being where you're supposed to be in certain coverages, and it translated to three turnovers early in the football game. And then offensively, being able to dictate what goes on the money down on third down. Atlanta was outstanding on third down, 9-17 on third down. You sprinkled in an effective running attack, and that makes it really difficult to defend those perimeter defenders or perimeter receivers if you're running the football with some effectiveness. So all that came together, and it equated to 40 points and a win on the road.
I'm not trying to sound like somebody who's patronizing, but I feel like there was a lot of patronizing that went on this week, kind of like you see when you see a baby boy or a baby girl take their first steps. Good boy. Good boy. You beat a football team who you're supposed to beat. Oh, great. Oh, you completed a first down. Oh, you completed a fourth down. Oh, you audibled on a play. Oh, you had a makeshift touchdown to Julio Jones. Oh, fantastic. We expect those things to happen with this football team. That's the one part of this that I find somewhat absurd, is that this is a much more talented football team than 1-5. Okay? That's the part of it that's infuriating for me, is that this team, and I'll say it again, you should be 4-2, given the teams that you've played. Bears, Panthers, Cowboys should have all been wins, given what I've seen from all those teams outside of the games that we played. And I'll sit here and tell you right now, my girlfriend can attest, I watch a lot of football. I got four screens that go on game day. I got the red zone on. I go back and watch things on the game pass. It's not just the Falcons games I watch, guys. And because of that, I look at the rest of the games for these teams that we've played. There's no way we should have lost those three games. Absolutely none. But we did. We can't do anything about it right now. If there's one guy who I feel like took an amazing step outside of the obvious guys this past week, it was Debo Deion Jones. And the way that I put it to Jarvis Davis earlier in the week, and I think he agreed, is that for the first 5 weeks of the season, we saw Deion Jones play linebacker. But as I told him earlier this week, last weekend, we finally saw Debo take the field.
When you think about the way he was playing on the first play of the game and getting an interception, and that's what we're used to. We're used to seeing 45 make plays like that. So the type of player that he is, and when he makes those plays, he even starts to play better. Mm-hmm. He starts, you know, making plays in the backfield and getting those TFLs. So when you have a player like that getting it going, and Raheem also talked about how he gave him that smile. And when a guy like Debo is playing like that and smiling, I mean, that gets a lot. That gets not only gets him motivated, but it gets his teammates motivated as well.
I mean, the best linebacker we've seen to this point of the season, throughout the entire six games, is Foye Aluka. And I feel like when you hear people say things about Raheem Morris and what he's done for this team, I think the one thing that he's done is he's chewed out some guys. The word that was used leading up to the game was, we were too comfortable, maybe complacent. Although, again, I don't know if it's possible that the Atlanta Falcons made it possible for the first time that you could be complacent at 0-5. I'm just saying. I don't know anybody who's comfortable at being 0-5, but apparently they were. And apparently Thomas Dimitroff, who spoke for the first time earlier this week to Peter King, said, I didn't think I was going to get fired. Really? Speaks to an organizational issue, which again I'll get into coming up in the Falcons Saturday walkthrough later on in the program around 2 o'clock. But one thing is evident, we saw a different Deion Jones on the field. We also saw a different Matt Ryan. We saw the MVP Matt Ryan. It's funny how a guy, when he gets protection and has his number one wide receiver on the field, how much better he can look. Dave Archer says it wasn't much more simple than that.
There was not a lot of pressure around Ryan. I thought he got comfortable early in the game. Dirk made a point of getting the ball out of his hands some early. I thought there were a lot cleaner looks. Some of that has to do with number 11 being on the field. That has a big influence on things
when you've got Julio Jones, that tends to occupy maybe two, three sets of eyes, which free things up and make things much cleaner looking. But I did think he settled into the game much better. I thought he looked antsy the last couple of weeks prior to the Minnesota game. Some of that had to be, you weren't getting enough effectiveness. There weren't guys separating like you'd like them to on the outside. But ultimately, he's seen everything you could possibly throw at him. It's going to be on him, though, to get settled in to games and kind of bottle how he felt in this game and take it over to this game against Detroit.
That's Falcons radio analyst Dave Archer. Willie P here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 404-741-0929. Your thoughts on whether I'm off base about this Falcons team or whether you feel like you agree in that we are much better than our record, at least in talent. Of course, not in the way that we've played. And also on Twitter, at Willie P Style. That's IEP Style. Something that's not gotten a lot of attention this season, and I think for good reason, is the fact that you are now pairing a pair of guys on the right side of the line that, regardless of the way the future of this franchise looks, you are going to see the future of the Falcons with Caleb McGarry and Chris Lindstrom. Last year, without Lindstrom for much of the season, Caleb McGarry was the worst rated tackle in all of football among qualifiers. The worst, Jerry. So that's not good. But this year, and again, I think we also saw glimpses of this in the last four or five games of the season once Lindstrom came back and was on the field next to him, you saw a different Caleb McGarry. And I feel like Jarvis Davis agrees that the Falcons will go as both McGarry and Lindstrom go.
I think those guys playing together, you can definitely tell those guys have that chemistry. They, especially when it comes to double teams. I was actually watching some film earlier, and you can just see how those guys, just the timing and being able to Caleb get the inside hand on that defensive tackle, and he'll immediately stoop right on up to that linebacker and then just seal off that wall, and Todd Gurley would cut right off his butt. And it's just a beautiful thing to see. You kind of realize why the Falcons drafted Caleb McGarry and traded up to draft him in the first round. So, but I think it's still some work to be done in pass protection. You know, there's still that growth process there. So it's good to see the growth in one aspect of his game, but I definitely I'm looking forward to seeing how he continues to get better in the pass pro.
And while the sack numbers aren't where they were to start last year for Matt Ryan, there have been some opportunities, not necessarily last week, but in the first 5 weeks where you saw Ryan somewhat hurried. Matt Ryan and Matthew Stafford are kind of star-crossed in a way. A lot of times they're used in the same sentence. They're good friends off the field. Of course, they golf together. Their wives know each other very well. They played four times. Matt's gotten the better of Matthew Ryan over Stafford. 3-1 is Ryan head-to-head against Stafford. The only win Stafford had didn't even come on this continent, came across the pond in London, a 22-21 victory for the Lions in Wembley Stadium on a game-winning field goal by Matt Prater. Ryan won the other three games, all taking place in Detroit. Matthew Stafford has not played in Atlanta. And one of the things that Dave Archer said that we didn't get to that we might play later on is that the thing about Stafford is that he is somebody who has the numbers that a lot of these other quarterbacks have, but the only number he doesn't have is wins. And what will we say about him after the season or after his career is over is that we're going to be talking about a player who has all the numbers that everybody else has but got saddled with a poor organization. Ryan's got a lot more wins than Stafford has. Those of you who are critics of Ryan might not believe that, but Stafford's a guy who's under 500 for his career, and Matt Ryan certainly is not. Willie P is in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com. We will come back, get into some more college football, a little bit on the Braves, and maybe also some basketball talk as well. The NBA could be back by the time you eat your Christmas dinner. Whether or not that's something you want to see or not remains to be seen for the Hawks. We'll talk about them coming up as well on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com.
We won't have any bye weeks this year.
Right.
But we're trying to be positive to work, use that for our advantage. One good thing about not having any bye weeks is that you don't have any breaks. You don't have to worry about, student athletes traveling during a bye week. And so our whole goal is just to make sure that we keep our student athletes safe. We keep everyone associated with our athletic program safe and healthy, and our community safe and healthy.
That's the Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, who was on ESPN talking about the Big Ten season, which starts today with a bit of a flurry. Ohio State leads Nebraska 24-14 at the half. There's intelligent life at the State University of New Jersey, colloquially known as Rutgers. They are leading in East Lansing in a football game, 28-13. What in the what in the Piscataway is going on, man? I have not been, again, admittedly following this particular game just because, again, there's plenty of other things, not only of local interest but national interest. But Isaiah Pacheco, 59 yards. He's got a pair of touchdowns. They got a dual-threat quarterback by the name of Noah Vedral, who's ran one in as well. He's thrown an interception, but Rutgers up 28-13. Lord have mercy. Clemson leading 24-14, approaching halftime. Also, North Carolina leading NC State 17-7. K-State all over Kansas right now, 27-7. They've reached the half in Conway, South Carolina, all knotted up. Eagles of Georgia Southern, Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina. Big Ten is in a bit of a precarious spot. I feel like if there's a team that can captivate the national spotlight, it is Ohio State. And that's the one thing that I've feared about the season that is getting underway. And again, I don't think it would have been this way regardless. I think it would have been this way regardless if we had COVID or not. We really don't have the option right now to not deal with it. But I do feel like a season of this nature was going to make one of two things happen. Either the rich get incredibly rich and take out any ability for teams outside of the top of having a sniff at the college football playoff, or you would have complete chaos. It'd be like 2007, where you have guys getting upset, teams looking lesser than expected, and you have a topsy-turvy jaunt to the finish that involved some real ambiguity when it comes to the college football playoff. But the Big Ten playing eight games, seven in the preliminary, and then one during the championship week, which they're going to seed teams that are outside the Big Ten championship, have them play each other with only really 1 week's advance notice on playing them. And along that, they will also play the Big Ten championship on that same weekend. So a very intriguing situation. Pac-12 is doing something similar as well, but with less games. And I feel like no one's talking about them. Even a team like USC that's garnered some preseason attention is not getting much of any real love. Oregon, Utah, those schools, no one really sees either of them factoring into the national picture and perspective. Big Ten, though, is interesting. And I think the one thing that Kevin Warren is looking at and saying, and again, I don't want to say this in a way of being insensitive, but when it comes to their decision to wait, I think a lot of people are asking the very fair question. What changed between when the SEC decided to start and this date? We aren't really in a different spot when we are with the virus. In fact, some could argue we're in a worse spot, given some of the spots that have popped up when it comes to the peaks and valleys of the way that we've contained this virus. That's not a political statement. That's just a fact. But I also feel like for those of us who see what the SEC is doing and see the malleability, the flexibility with their schedule, the fact that the Big Ten has put forth such a rigid model, I think could come back to bite them in the behind. Kevin Warren was asked what his conference could have done differently by the way that they handled their start to the season.
If I had to look back and say, you know, what's something that maybe we collectively could have been done a little bit better, it would have been we could have done a better job of really talking more about the great work that was being done in our conference to get us to this weekend. Like I said, it's been 72 days. We've accomplished a lot. I know that we've created an environment where our student athletes are so much more healthier and safe as we go into the season. There's not a guarantee, but I know we're all excited to be able to get back to work to allow them to play the sport that they love so much. I think it's going to be a fantastic Big Ten football season, and I'm hoping and I'm staying prayerful that people remain healthy and safe.
That's Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner. Look, I don't blame him for dodging the question, but I think it's a very fair one because I'm not saying that it's working. no one's saying that it's working. The outbreak that's taking place in Florida is very, very concerning. There's concern that they'll even be able to field the football team next week when they take on Missouri, and even also in 2 weeks when they face Georgia. They're down to somewhere around the 50 scholarship mark when it comes to, or 50 players who are scholarship players who might be available for that game. And that's something that puts them at a big competitive disadvantage. And no one is saying that the safety of players and the safety of fans and the safety of all involved isn't the most paramount thing. But the question I'm asking, and again, I really didn't, other than acquiring the ability to do daily testing, I don't see where we're different with this virus. But be that as it may, I hope it goes well for them. But at the same time, I feel like they might have compromised any margin for error for a team that wants to get in the college football playoff to get there. Not saying that there's anybody who might be more deserving, but just having more games, unless Ohio State comes out and blows the doors off everybody. And when you think about this Nebraska game, they've looked a tad shaky out of the gate, which I think you might get a reprieve in for 1 week. But if that continues, you wonder about their viability nationally with the college football playoff. I did want to get into this really quickly because the NBA apparently is eyeing a pre-Christmas start date. That's something that has been reported by ESPN reporter Adrian Wojnarowski and has been talked about over the course of the last couple of days. I know Steve Koonin went on with Dukes and Bell and kind of denied it, said that that might be a little early to really talk about that or even surmise that. They say that there's still a lot of people who are looking at that and saying that might not be the case. But the one thing that is intriguing about the way this looks is that they're going to play a bit of a shorter season, at least according to the reports. Only 72 games, and they are going to have something similar to what we had at the start of the pandemic, and that is a play-in tournament. Now, it won't include the amount of teams that I think we had at the beginning of the pandemic where you have everybody playing for seeding, but I do feel like they are going to do something about the seventh and eighth spots in each conference and put them in a scenario where you have 7, 8, 9, 10 kind of playing alongside each other in each conference to try and drum up some more TV revenue and also excitement going into the postseason. That is the one thing about the NBA. While their postseason is incredibly long and drawn out, it is lucrative and brings about an every night type feel that they like. And truth be told, if there's one thing about the NBA's regular season that people hate is the fact that it's too long. I feel like you could argue that every sport of the major ones, outside of maybe the NFL, has too long of regular season. 16 games is just fine. Don't make it longer. I think it's fine the way it is. I feel like baseball could be 140, and no one would complain except the owners and the players. Well, the players wouldn't even complain. They would just wonder whether or not they'd still get their same money. As long as they're getting paid the same, I think they'd be fine with it. 140 wouldn't hurt their feelings. It hurt the owners' feelings in their pockets. That's why they don't like it. I feel like the NHL could be less than 82 games long because they have the best postseason in all of sports. And I feel like the NBA could be less as well because there is such a stark difference between what playoff basketball looks like and regular season NBA basketball looks like. And that was not more evident, too, than the way we looked at the way the regular season went and the way the playoffs went. The problem is the postseason, and again, I will say this, and I'm not going to say I'll die on this hill, but I do believe this to be the case. The political stuff had nothing to do with the reason that the NBA ratings went down. It had to do more with the overwhelming amount of options that are out there, the fact that it was out of place where it was in the summer, and I also feel like the product aesthetically, as it went along, say from the conference semifinal rounds on forward, the product aesthetically lost its mojo and momentum, in my mind. And that comes to you as somebody who watched the entire postseason start to finish. I feel like at the beginning, you saw a little juice. You saw some nice, intriguing matchups. And then when you got to around the final eight, final four, it was like, okay, I'm about done with this. I've had enough. Let me know when the next season starts. And part of this, too, is, and again, I think baseball had this a little bit outside of its regionalism, because baseball has become a regional sport anyway. We care about the Braves and nobody else. World Series numbers are down. And again, I think it has nothing to do with social justice and political statements. It has more to do with the fact that people only care about their own team. And nobody cares about Tampa. Even Tampa doesn't even care about Tampa. But the problem with the NBA is that it felt contrived. It felt manufactured. I feel like baseball felt the same way at times, outside of our own team. The season felt very manufactured with nobody in the stands. NFL figured it out. And again, they had the benefit of time. They had the benefit of the ability that their sport is very much bulletproof when it comes to losses in eyeballs and revenue and those type of things. But I do believe also is that they made their game with the fact that you are able to travel. The outside of the bubble element made it look somewhat normal and sound somewhat normal. It still might have a little bit of a tweak to it that's a little bit different because of the fact that you have offenses going off at a historic rate. A lot of that having to do with the fact that you're playing in empty buildings and defenses don't have the same edge that they might in a home building. But in reality, how many home buildings in the NFL anymore are imposing like they are? Superdome is one. Kansas City's Arrowhead Stadium is one. Lambeau Field is one. It isn't scary to go play in Jerry World. It's definitely not scary to go play in our building, at least in the time that it's been there, limited time that it's been in there. It's not scary to go play at the Meadowlands. It's not scary to go play in Miami. In reality, I feel like that part of it is somewhat overblown. But again, the ability to audible with ease and have the type of ability that you have on offense to take the crowd out of the game is something that has had a very dramatic effect on offenses and the on-field product, but I feel like fans like that. Willie P is in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P, on Twitter, at Willie P Style. The segment formerly known as the Falcons Big Segment, the Falcons Saturday Walkthrough, what has Raheem Morris done to inspire this team to play better underneath him? Is it him, or is it bad competition? I'll answer that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.